Welcome to Aaron Mankey's Cabinet of Curiosities, a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild.
Our world is full of the unexplainable. And if history is an open book, all of these amazing tales are right there on display, just waiting for us to explore. Welcome to the Cabinet of Curiosities.
The test of any solid relationship is how well two people communicate. Are they withholding and distant, or do they share everything openly? And that doesn't just go for couples either. Communication between friends and business partners is also very important. But good communication is perhaps most crucial between two divers. After all, if you want to know if you're about to swim into a dangerous cave system or if there's something wrong with your oxygen tank that you can't see, you need a friend. In May of 1984, a pair of Navy divers happened to be working on underwater repairs to the whale enclosures in San Diego Bay. For those times when they needed to communicate with the surface, they used a specially designed underwater comms device known as a wet phone. But one day, the divers heard someone yelling at them. He kept shouting, "Out! Out!" The voice was unmistakable. There was no way this was a trick of the ear. Someone was frantically telling the men to get out of the water. But one of the divers, a Navy veteran named Miles Braggett, shot to the surface and asked his supervisor, "Who told me to get out?" The supervisor, though, was perplexed. He hadn't said anything over the wet phone. But Braggett wasn't the only one. Sam Ridgway, a veterinarian and the co-founder of the National Marine Mammal Foundation, had an office near the San Diego Bay. He'd also heard the talking in the area, about 150 feet away on an adjacent pier. Ridgway soon got word of the phantom voice haunting Braggett and started listening more closely at the sounds of the bay. As it turned out, the warnings to get out of the water hadn't come from the wet phone after all, nor had the supervisor shouted them from the surface. In fact, the voice didn't belong to a person. It belonged to a whale. One specific whale, a beluga named Nosy. Nosy had been legally captured in 1977 by Inuit hunters when he was very young. His name, Nosy, spelled N-O-C, was an allusion to a Canadian fly called Noceums, or biting midges. They were plentiful in Manitoba, where he was captured. Ridgway wanted to learn more about Nosy's capabilities, so he and his team taught him to speak on command while simultaneously recording his sounds. What they learned was that the whale also had been listening to them. He'd been studying the voices coming from the people on the shore and then learned how to recreate them himself. He'd heard the diving supervisor saying "out" so many times, he figured out how to say it too. Ridgway found that Nosy's whale calls were several octaves higher than his more human-like sounds. In other words, this beluga didn't just learn to say human words, he also changed his voice to sound more like a human being. Much of Ridgway's research was done using a special sensor implanted in Nosy's nasal cavity. The instrument was able to tell him how the whale was able to sound like a person. To generate the normal chirps and clicks that they're known for, whales pass air over a set of vibrating flaps in their heads called phonic lips. But to sound like a person, Nosy increased the air pressure in his nasal cavity while changing the shape of those phonic lips, allowing him to achieve a lower pitched tone. This action didn't just alter his voice either. It caused his head to swell to the point where it looked like it might pop. He put himself through all of that just so that he could sound like a human being for short periods of time. Nosy was only the tip of the iceberg, though. The Vancouver Aquarium was also once home to a beluga named Lugosi, who could say his own name. Nosy spent 22 years in captivity, though, finally passing away in 1999. But he only spoke like a human for about four of those years, beginning in 1984. Once he reached a certain age, he simply stopped talking that way. So, pay close attention the next time you're in the ocean. If someone starts shouting at you to get out of the water, it might not be because a shark is nearby. It could just be a whale with something to say. Humanity has evolved over millions of years to become what we are today. Our bone structure is different from what it once was. Our speech patterns have changed, and even the shape of our teeth is not what they used to be. Remnants of previous generations have been discovered all over the world, including skulls and bone fragments from Australopithecus and Paranthropus. But in 1890, a French anthropologist stumbled across a major discovery, one that forced humanity to ask itself an important question. Did we used to be taller? His name was Georges Vacher de la Pouge. He was a former magistrate and prosecutor who eventually became a professor of anthropology in 1886, although he would be remembered by history as the man whose work in eugenics eventually inspired the Holocaust in the 1940s. In 1890, de la Pouge traveled to the small commune of Castelnau-le-Lez in the south of France. Its population numbered fewer than 1,000 people, but for such a tiny town, it held a massive secret, one that de la Pouge was going to uncover. It was wintertime, and he was excavating a Bronze Age cemetery when he came across a unique find. Right there in the ground was a set of bone fragments. Now, of course, this being a cemetery, that wasn't surprising, but these pieces were different. For one, they were much older than the bones surrounding them. The fragments dated back to the Neolithic period, sometime between 10,000 and 4,500 BC. He had found them at the bottom of a tumulus, or an ancient burial mound. But the bones weren't just old, they were also large, very large, much larger than the bones of any other individual buried nearby. So de la Pouge wrote about them for a 19th century science journal called La Nature. In his article, he described the three pieces that he'd found. The first segment had come from a femur and measured 5.5 inches in length. The second fragment was broken off of a tibia. It was nearly 11 inches long. And the third piece had come from a humerus, twice the size of a normal one. In fact, scientists compared these remains to the bones of regular-sized humans and found that all three of them were twice as big. According to de la Pouge, the person they belonged to would have been 11.5 feet tall when they died. This unknown subject eventually came to be known as the Giant of Castelnau. The fragments were eventually taken to the University of Montpellier, about 3 miles away from where they were found. They were studied by several professors and scholars, but one in particular made an interesting proclamation. His name was Paul-Louis-André Quinet, and he taught pathological anatomy at Montpellier School of Medicine. Dr. Quinet examined the bones de la Pouge had found and noted that they came from what he described as a very tall race. Perhaps they were not an anomaly among a civilization of normal-sized human beings. Maybe there were more giants yet to be found. Well, that's exactly what happened a few years later in a Montpellier cemetery. Another ancient burial ground was found by workers who had been excavating a waterworks reservoir. They discovered a number of human skulls that were described in the papers as being 28, 31, and 32 inches in circumference. And buried beside them were more oversized bones, which were soon sent to Paris to be studied. One expert claimed that they had come from a race of giant men who were somewhere between 10 and 15 feet tall. There could still be more giant bones waiting to be unearthed in France, or elsewhere in the world. Around the same time as the Giant of Castelnau was found, it was widely believed that a race of giants had also lived in North America, thousands, even millions of years ago.
I hope you've enjoyed today's guided tour of the Cabinet of Curiosities. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or learn more about the show by visiting curiositiespodcast.com. This show was created by me, Aaron Mankey, in partnership with How Stuff Works. I make another award-winning show called Lore, which is a podcast, book series, and television show. And you can learn all about it over at theworldoflore.com. And until next time, stay curious. Thank you.